Lord Auditor Rehovis's bow was a bit stiff, but that had been true for as long as Miles had known him. Arthritis, probably. "Sit down," Miles said, waving him to the sofa. "Something to drink?" "Whatever you're having." "Ah," he added, gratified, as Miles retrieved the brandy snifters. "Yes, please."
"Gregor has asked me to conduct the search," Miles said, going straight to the point. "For your successor."
"Cheers."
Verhovis toasted him, in nothing but goodwill. "I wanted to know if you had any opinions about it," Miles said. "You needn't participate, if you'd rather not."
"I'm happy to help, however you like."
The man was imperturbable. "You'll be impossible to replace," Miles said honestly. "To duplicate, I mean." Verhovis was a singular mind. He had the talents of a prime minister, if his life had gone a more overly political direction.
"And that isn't the point, in any case," Verhovis said, dipping his chin. "I've been thinking for a while, Vorkosigan, and I..." "Oh, my apologies. My prince."
Miles waved this off. "I'll answer to that until the day I die," he said, "no matter how politically inconvenient. You were saying?"
Verhovis nodded gravely. "It's not enough to choose a man by vocation, I think," he said. "With only eight of us..."
"Five, really," Miles put in.
"Precisely. With so few, you'll never anticipate every need. That's what the Ninth Auditorship is for, anyway. To bring in the weapons developer, or the neurosurgeon, or the literature professor." "Ha! Haven't I told you that one? A question of the authenticity of a play from the time of isolation, upon which inheritance turned for a series of honestly ridiculous reasons. In any case..."
He shook his head, sipped his drink.
"It's the quality of the mind, not the vocation."
"And what quality would that be?" Miles prompted.
"Oh, all the expected things. Suppleness, adaptability, lateral thinking."
He gestured, open-palmed.
"But the main thing is, I like to think I've served well, that I've been helpful."
It was said without pride or question, but Miles answered anyway. "You have."
"It's that, I think," Verhovis said. "It's personal. It's why some of the other auditors were of no real use to the Emperor, even before they grew infirm. They were chosen to fit another hand, and they did not understand him. You need someone you can work with, a person simultaneously independent and an extension of your will."
"That was the Imperial you," Miles realized mid-nod, "delivered to him for the first time. It meant Gregor, of course, but also Miles, slotted into the Imperial mechanism beside him, seamlessly in Verhovis's mind. It was a shift of perception Miles himself had not yet achieved. Tizzying, to catch a flash of it like that."
"Quite right," Miles said.
"Thank you. I appreciate the advice. And if you have anything more concrete, some names you'd like to put into consideration, please tell me."
"Kind of a lark, you know," Verhovis confided. "Who else gets to do this? Not counts. They've got inheritance precedence laws. Perhaps it's morbid, but I think it's actually grand, choosing the man to take my place."
"I hadn't thought of it that way," Miles said. He studied his fingernails, then looked up again. "What the hell? I know something about what's happening to you right now," he said. "I was very sick not too long ago, and, the details aren't important, but what I mean to say is, you wear it well." Verhovis looked startled, then pleased.
"Why, thank you," he said. "I don't have many regrets. Some,
If there were none, I think I would have been doing things very wrong. One of them is that I won't get to see the Crown Prince. Footsteps sounded in the hall, and Gregor appeared, dressed for the evening.
"Lord Auditor,"
he said formally, then flicked a glance to Miles.
"Your guests are beginning to arrive."
"Right."
Miles stood and rubbed his hands together.
"This is going to be fun."
It actually was. The receiving line didn't get clogged up, miracle of miracles, and Miles ran through a series of mental mnemonics to keep all the new faces attached to the proper names. Ivan appeared, uncharacteristically early. Miles attributed the punctuality to Ekaterin, who was looking lovely in green, particularly when Gregor told her so, and she went pink and stuttery. Delia was busy ensuring the line ran smoothly, so her husband appeared to make his bow, accompanied by a group of unfamiliar Komarans, two officers with Beriaran wives, a financier, and a doctor. Three people were either flustered or malicious enough to kiss Miles's hand as if he were a lady, which was a trial, both for the muttered titters it provoked in the onlookers, and for the overwhelming desire to curl the hand into a fist and present it an inch farther up the face. Gregor's invisible spasms of hilarity every time didn't help, either. Miles absently greeted a stockbroker, whose meteoric portfolio indicated either extraordinary perception or extraordinary insider trading, only one of which was the skill set he was after. Gregor had been laughing a lot lately, he thought, sneaking a quick sideways look. That's because of you, you dolt. The mere quarter glass of wine he'd drunk would not excuse the warmth in his face, and Miles coughed momentarily into his hand to collect himself. The end of the line finally straggled by, and they were allowed up to mingle. They were pulled almost immediately into the nasty vortex of an argument on advanced biological imports. Miles listened for 3 minutes, then faked a summons from across the room and ruthlessly abandoned Gregor to it. He wandered for a while, drifting from conversation to conversation. Unlike many of the upper-crust Vorish gatherings he'd been to lately, not everyone here actually knew each other. There was a lot of, "So, what do you do, then?" which no high-society Vor would ever ask another. Miles crossed 3 people off his mental list in the course of 20 minutes, one for having the bad judgment to be already slurring his words an hour into the party, and 2 for being so stultifyingly dull it made his brain congeal. Gregor appeared with a light touch to his elbow, just as the dining room doors were opening, and Miles submitted himself to be escorted in. It turned out that Lady Alice had separated them, with Gregor at one end of the table, surrounded by a buffer of friends, and Miles at the other, with an industrial shipbuilder and a cybernetics researcher on one side, and the Glenize Kamaran doctor friend and Admiral Vortain on the other. It was an odd mix, and they all had to work a bit in the beginning to get the conversation going. But Ma Kosti came to the rescue. An innocuous comment about the seared salmon elicited the information that Garen, the shipbuilder, had worked as a short-order cook while in university, and revealed the further fact that he was hilarious. Their entire end of the table spent the first course in fits over a highly convoluted story.
"But true, my lord, every word."
Involving a misprogrammed protein vat and a befuddled health inspector. Miles saw it coming, but he still had to dab his eyes with his napkin when Garen finished.
"Tastes like chicken!"
This started Admiral Vortain on the fruitful line of,
"The worst job I ever had."
Miles contributed the story of nearly burying himself in mud on Kirill Island, and Dr. Farley, to his left, offered a morbid but charming account of life in an organ regeneration laboratory. At that point, their conversation was subsumed by the perennial cultural assimilation debate, spreading down the table like a virus. Miles sat back, mildly annoyed, and accidentally caught the eye of Dr. Farley,
who was casting surreptitious looks over to see how the butcher's son was taking this.
"Some differences so fundamental they're all but biological," someone said. Miles and Dr. Farley rolled their eyes simultaneously, caught each other at it, and grinned in mutually startled amusement.
Miles leaned over and spoke confidentially. "Lately, I swear this conversation is more nuanced and productive if you start at a berry yarn and a kamar and walk into a bar." Farley actually laughed at that.
"Dov Galani says assimilation is working better than anyone thinks, because you can be guaranteed to have exactly the same conversation about it around any given Kamaran or Beriaran table."
"Does he? He'd know, hopping back and forth like he does every few weeks. I haven't been to Komar in nearly 18 months, at least before the honeymoon,"
Miles realized suddenly.
"I haven't either, come to that," Farley said. "I imagine you've been busy. At least, that's what I always tell my mother."
"Do you like it here?" Miles asked, curious.
"I do," Farley said, smiling wryly. "I came for the job. I'm a diagnostician, you see, and you lured the best diagnostics unit over here from Solstice about 10 years ago. But now, I think I'll stay for the climate. The oxygen content, really. And open spaces. And sunlight."
He broke off, then looked hastily around for a cue whether to stand or not, as Gregor came around the end of the table and nodded a reserved greeting.
"Rakosi needs me for a minute," he said, setting a hand on Miles's shoulder.
"Problem?" Miles asked, dropping his napkin on the table. Gregor kept him in his seat with a gentle pressure.
"No, not yet. Stay. Enjoy your party."
He vanished just as silently. The end of the line finally straggled by, and they were allowed up to mingle. They were pulled almost immediately into the nasty vortex of an argument on advanced biological imports. Miles listened for 3 minutes, then faked a summons from across the room and ruthlessly abandoned Gregor to it. He wandered for a while, drifting from conversation to conversation. Unlike many of the upper-crust Vorish gatherings he'd been to lately, not everyone here actually knew each other. There was a lot of, "So, what do you do, then?" which no high-society Vor would ever ask another. Miles crossed 3 people off his mental list in the course of 20 minutes, one for having the bad judgment to be already slurring his words an hour into the party, and 2 for being so stultifyingly dull it made his brain congeal. Gregor appeared with a light touch to his elbow, just as the dining room doors were opening, and Miles submitted himself to be escorted in. It turned out that Lady Alice had separated them, with Gregor at one end of the table, surrounded by a buffer of friends, and Miles at the other, with an industrial shipbuilder and a cybernetics researcher on one side, and the Glenize Kamaran doctor friend and Admiral Vortain on the other. It was an odd mix, and they all had to work a bit in the beginning to get the conversation going. But Ma Kosti came to the rescue. An innocuous comment about the seared salmon elicited the information that Garen, the shipbuilder, had worked as a short-order cook while in university, and revealed the further fact that he was hilarious. Their entire end of the table spent the first course in fits over a highly convoluted story.
"But true, my lord. Every word."
Involving a misprogrammed protein vat and a befuddled health inspector. Miles saw it coming, but he still had to dab his eyes with his napkin when Garen finished.
"Tastes like chicken!"
This started Admiral Vortain on the fruitful line of,
"The worst job I ever had."
Miles contributed the story of nearly burying himself in mud on Kirill Island, and Dr. Farley, to his left, offered a morbid but charming account of life in an organ regeneration laboratory.
At that point, their conversation was subsumed by the perennial cultural assimilation debate, spreading down the table like a virus. Miles sat back, mildly annoyed, and accidentally caught the eye of Dr. Farley, who was casting surreptitious looks over to see how the butcher's son was taking this.
"Some differences so fundamental they're all but biological," someone said.
Miles and Dr. Farley rolled their eyes simultaneously, caught each other at it, and grinned in mutually startled amusement. Miles leaned over and spoke confidentially. "Lately, I swear this conversation is more nuanced and productive if you start at a berry yarn and a kamar and walk into a bar." Farley actually laughed at that.
"Dove Galani says assimilation is working better than anyone thinks, because you can be guaranteed to have exactly the same conversation about it around any given Kamaran or Barryarin table."
"Does he? He'd know, hopping back and forth like he does every few weeks. I haven't been to Komar in nearly 18 months, at least before the honeymoon." Miles realized suddenly.
"I haven't either, come to that," Farley said. "I imagine you've been busy. At least, that's what I always tell my mother."
"Do you like it here?" Miles asked, curious.
"I do," Farley said, smiling wryly. "I came for the job. I'm a diagnostician, you see, and you lured the best diagnostics unit over here from Solstice about 10 years ago. But now, I think I'll stay for the climate. The oxygen content, really. And open spaces. And sunlight."
He broke off, then looked hastily around for a cue whether to stand or not, as Gregor came around the end of the table and nodded a reserved greeting.
"Rakosi needs me for a minute," he said, setting a hand on Miles's shoulder.
"Problem?" Miles asked, dropping his napkin on the table. Gregor kept him in his seat with a gentle pressure.
"No, not yet. Stay. Enjoy your party."
He vanished just as silently.
"Came to pragmatically accept the reality of Barryarin stewardship as a betterment to Komar, in the face of astrographic fact. Why, in military protection of shipping convoys alone."
That was Galeni, knocking down dissenters with that dry eloquence of his.
"He must be very good at whatever it is he does for you," Farley said, following Miles's gaze.
"Too good," Miles said. "Poor bugger's never going to get promoted out of his current slot, not with the record he's been setting. That, and his wife's career, will keep him here, I think."
"That's a strange thing for Barryarin to say," Farley said,
then moved quickly to apologize. Miles waved him off. "Oh, you're right. It's true, though. She's coming into her own as Gregor's, our, social director. She's going to be a power broker, plain and simple." He glanced up the table to where Delia sat, flirting gently with Vorhovis. "How do you meet them, anyway?"
"I do shifts in the emergency room at Vorbar Sultana General,"
Farley said.
"I patched him up when he took that projectile to the shoulder, and we got to talking."
"Ha! I'd forgotten about that," Miles said, smirking.
Poor maligned Galeni, who had come out the other side of a Cetagandan death squad, only to be taken down by a punk kid with a homemade rifle in an amateur grocery store robbery. It wasn't actually funny. Except for the way Galeni turned bright red at a mere hint of it. Miles's attention was jerked away by Delia, who, in Gregor's absence, passed the duty of the toast to him. He quieted the table and delivered one off the top of his head, to camaraderie, to his son simmering downstairs, and, obliquely, to Vorhovis. The string of toast that followed was mercifully truncated, and the guests stood when Miles did, to flow into the string of connected parlors.
"This is weird," Ivan said,
appearing as Maz accepted a tiny cup of coffee from a circulating servant.
What is?
This party. Miles, you do realize no one's rekindled an ancient blood feud? Or even upchucked in the cloakroom? These friends of yours are doing it all wrong.
They're not my friends, Maz corrected. Not yet, anyway.
Ivan snorted. After ridiculously expensive coffee imported straight off an Escobarn plantation, you bet they are.
Where's your astronomically better half? Miles asked.
Ivan looked around furtively.
Don't let her hear you say that, he hissed. Just because some people are all disgustingly newlywed, where's yours, anyway?
Gregor materialized out of the crowd and tapped him on the shoulder. Ivan jumped, swearing as coffee went everywhere.
That's it, he snapped. If you two are going all creepy telepathic on us, I'm moving to Comar.
Is everything all right? Maz asked Gregor.
Fine. Enjoying your party?
I am. Thanks. Maz took his hand and drew it through his arm.
Come on. I want you to ask that fellow Garen those pointed questions about bait and engine advancements that Minister Mary couldn't answer last week. See what he says.
They were separated half an hour in, and half an hour after that. Miles looked around and realized he hadn't actually seen Gregor in a while. He exercised Admiral Naismith's accent on the new Baton ambassador just to watch him boggle, and then was waylaid for his sins by a linguistics professor who wanted to talk about his diphthongs. Miles escaped into the untender mercies of Prime Minister Rakosi, who, after 5 years of proximity, was still something of a mystery. Miles couldn't even tell if the man liked him fine or loathed his guts. He made a point, for the rest of the night, of seeking out the remaining new faces. He wished he could have Avalos follow him around and take notes as he rapidly added and deleted and flagged names for consideration. He had a lot of IMSEC files to read tomorrow. He took his leave just after midnight and trotted upstairs, humming. Gregor was on the sitting room sofa with a glass of wine to hand and a stack of Dorca's letters in his lap.
"I've discovered yet another marital benefit," he said, looking up. "I can leave a party when I've had enough of people, and it's much less remarked on when you're there to hold down the fort."
Miles flung himself down on the sofa and exchanged glares with the cat, who was sprawled behind Gregor's shoulders.
"Aha," he said lazily. "His dastardly designs are revealed at last."
Gregor's smile softened.
"And then you come home to me," he said.
"That's still blowing my mind, let me tell you."
Miles kicked off his boots, then stuck his cold toes in the warm bend behind Gregor's knee. It was one of those presumptuous gestures that had annoyed previous lovers, but that Gregor thrived on, for their rarity in his life.
"So," Miles said, "we're going to have a son."
"Yes, we are,"
Gregor agreed, equally serious. Miles rolled his neck to loosen his shoulders.
"I'm going to ask you if you're all right in just a minute here," he said. "And I'm going to keep doing it now and then for the next couple months, if you don't mind. Are you all right?"
Gregor didn't pretend to misunderstand him.
"I think so," he said. "Most of the time, I'm merely terrified at having charge of a new human life. I'm told that's normal."
"Is it?" Miles asked, diverted. "I just keep hopping up and down and chanting, 'Faster, embryo! Gestate! Gestate!'"
Gregor laughed, and then spontaneously said,
"I love you."
"I know,"
Miles said, warming. But Gregor had stopped smiling.
"No, I mean..."
He shook his head, made a frustrated face. I'm not very good at this, when it's not on paper, and I'm sorry for that.
You're not very good,
Miles repeated helplessly. This from Gregor, who hadn't just offered his heart once, but did it over and over again 10,000 times, with their morning coffee, or when they couldn't sleep, or when Miles was using him as a foot warmer. Gregor extended himself every day, and yet somehow it was never ordinary. And yes, it was true. Sometimes there was a frantic quality to his gestures, as if he were trying to pour out all the devotion he had before his happiness went up in smoke. But Miles had schooled himself not to take that personally, as a sign of doubt, a long time ago, and he liked to think it was getting better, under long, careful tending. I know sometimes you can't say what you want to, when it's just you and me, Miles said. That you get tongue-tied.
Gregor nodded, miserable, and Miles wanted to grab him and shake him.
Gregor was a rock in the face of Sidigandan threats and personal hatred and traitors. It was only Miles that undid him. And you don't think that tells me everything I need to know, loud and clear? Miles asked, then sighed, frustrated by his own inadequacies.
Gregor looked away, took a breath, and let the tension bleed out of his shoulders. He rested one warm hand on Miles's ankle, and fished out one of the letters with the other to sit silently on Miles's knee.
Yeah, Miles said softly. Like that.
My lady, it's done. You must have heard the cannons in celebration this morning. The new Count Vordavin ordered his men to stand down. And by God, Kate, but they did. He's acquitted himself well, Vordavin has, though it's an ugly way for a man to come to power. My father was the first man to bend the knee to me. Did I ever tell you? I was 16, the day we buried Crown Prince Tavar, and he and his friends brought me to Vorhartung and swore their oaths to me in the council chamber. They told me not to worry, that Barriar would be mine by blood and by right. 6 years on, half of those men are dead. We've spilt the blood, and I've asserted the right. And there she is, united Barriar. And now what to do with her? Don't worry. I remember all the plans we made, your brother and I, with you sitting quietly by the fire at your sewing. Except when you'd look up, every now and then, and say, No, sire, not that way. I was terrified of your nose. Do you realize? It made for a very fraught state of mind, waiting for the answer I wanted most. But here it is, peace, and a ride home to my lady wife. This must never happen again. When I think of the good soldiers sacrificed to pride, or 3 square miles of bad farmland, or rank stupidity, I could just scream at them all. And it won't happen again. Not in my reign. I will be home soon. Your brother sends his love. I would do the same, but you already have it all, and you can parcel it up as you need it. I will be there soon. And you can tell me how the child progresses. I will try not to rage. I will not put my fist through the wall again. I will try to be the man you need. Yours, Dorka Vorbara.
Gregor's library had once been comfortable and cozy, with the addition of Miles's books, accommodated on a double row of new shelves. It had transformed into an overcrowded used bookshop.
Miles knelt and ran his fingers along the leather spines of Gregor's familial biographies. He didn't have one for Empress Catherine, and an extensive interlibrary query revealed that there actually wasn't one. Miles selected Dorca's fat volume and carried it next door to the study to read in front of the fire. He started out skimming for references. He knew this story, after all. But it was famous for a reason, and Miles found himself slowing as the teenage Dorca served in his father's military train and learned statecraft from his mother's father, Prince Verl, the Emperor's brother. Catherine first appeared, in passing, as a lady companion to Dorca's sister, the one who died of the blood rot, not the one who hung herself, a footnote helpfully clarified. A cross-reference directed him forward to the deaths of the Crown Prince and all his siblings, one after the other when Dorca was 16, carried off by the same disease. There was a picture of a gaunt, anonymous face, skin mottled purple and black after months of internal decay. And he was a lucky one, surviving through the initial intestinal illness long enough for the virus to attack his skin and lungs. Miles shuddered and kept going through that disastrous spring with the imperial heir dead and the epidemic cresting and the count's old feud snarling to life again. He could only imagine what it had been like for Dorca, receiving sudden pledges of loyalty from one grizzled old player after another, all of whom wanted above everything to control him. Dorca was named heir almost immediately, assumed the Vorbara name, and attended upon his dying great-uncle. And then, in the course of less than 4 years, with the third and final wave of the epidemic sputtering out and the counts taking sides for what could have been a cataclysmic war, something happened. Dorca lifted the tattered remains of imperial power, and in his untested hands it became something new. He won Le Sanguinaire to his cause and gathered the counts beneath his banner one after another, with guile and blazing charisma and, occasionally, brutal violence. He sifted the skills and loyalties of his advisers, retained some and discarded others. His father, most painfully. He wed Catherine 3 months after his 20th birthday, against the advice of many who would have preferred he take to wife the sister or daughter of a wavering count, rather than waste himself on an existing tie. There was a grainy photograph of them together in wedding finery. Dorca was the familiar Vorbara model, tall and lean, with the brown eyes that had dominated before Izar's line. Catherine nearly matched him in height. Her dark hair was piled atop her head, but Miles thought it was curly. She was turned side on to the camera, facing him, and it was hard to see much more. Yuri was born at midsummer, when Dorca was 22, and Catherine 26, and she went to her pyre the very next day. Dorca carried on his campaign to control the counts. He remarried 4 years later, a Vortain this time, and produced Prince Sav and the girls in rapid succession. The eldest, Dava, would one day become Izar's wife and Gregor's grandmother. The Baden Expeditionary Force arrived when Sav was 3, and 4 years after that, so did the Sedigandans. Of Catherine, there was nothing more. Miles left the book on the sofa and went to dress. He was distracted, fruitlessly turning and turning the paltry pieces of information. That was, until he stuck his foot into his boot and something squished warmly between his toes. Miles yelped, yanked the boot off, and extracted foot from slimy sock with his fingertips. He hopped to the bathroom, did some emergency scrubbing, then came back and carefully inspected his next set of boots before putting them on. Then, on a hunch, he got down on his knees and peered carefully into every visible pair. Gregor's footwear was unscathed, but Miles made a series of increasingly horrible faces as he investigated his own.
"My lord," said the valet, appearing in the doorway. "Can I help you with anything?" He didn't actually add, "You raving, shoe-sniffing lunatic." "Yes," Miles said through his teeth. "You can tell Gregor that... No, never mind. I'll tell him myself." He shoved a pile of boots into Reed's arms. "Deal with these, will you?" he said meanly, and sailed out. He waited an entire 3 minutes in the outer office before Gregor's early morning meeting broke up. Miles stormed past Minister Van, whose cheerful hail transformed halfway through into a quick bow and retreat. "Good morning," Gregor said, looking up. "I'm sorry I missed you at breakfast." "Your cat," Miles said.
"Yes?" Gregor prompted. "Do you two need a neutral moderator again?"
"I need a Tanglefield generator," Miles snapped. "He puked in my shoes."
"Oh," Gregor said. I apologize sincerely on his behalf."
"Not your shoes, you'll note," Miles said. "Just mine. Repeatedly."
"I'm sure yours were easier to reach," Gregor offered.
"Gah!" Miles said. He snatched Gregor's coffee cup and took a substantial gulp. Gregor watched him, unassailably straight-faced, damn him. "What do I need to get into the vaults?" Miles asked, in carefully modulated tones.
"Oh, right."
Gregor swiveled to his comm console to tap in a series of rapid commands.
"Let me just... There. Your seal should do it now."
"Thanks," Miles said, and exited. One of Gregor's secretaries passed him on the way in. "My lord," he said helpfully, "I think you picked up the wrong coffee cup. That's the Emperor's." "Yes, it is," Miles said, and kept going. He went straight down to the vaults, 3 levels below ground, where the 4 wings of the residence met. His seal got him through both sets of doors, and Miles spent a few stunned minutes wandering around. It was like the best organized jumble sale he'd ever seen. Princess Corrine's elaborate wedding dress hung swathed in plastic, next to Emperor Azar's blood-spattered uniform from the Civil War. There was a whole rack of chains and seals for every office imaginable, an impressive weapons cache, and boxes. Hundreds and hundreds of boxes, all meticulously labeled. Miles went back out, commandeered the 1st 4 burly guards he saw, and set them to carrying. He spent the next 3 hours acclimating to his new office from the perspective of the floor, since his desk wasn't big enough to spread out as much as he wanted. He took a break mid-morning to go upstairs and have the steward unlock Dorca's old rooms for him. It was far more informative on the topic of nursery space than anything else. The rooms had been stripped of anything personal, and most of the furniture as well. Avalos would be pleased to learn that there was still an impressive hole in the plaster wall opposite the living room fireplace, complete with suggestive bloodstains. The bedroom furniture was mostly still there, empty wardrobe and a chest of drawers, and an enormous bed pushed up against the far wall. Miles stared at that wall for a minute, frowning, and turned away. He wandered back downstairs, thinking. Emperor Dorca the soldier, the statesman, the infamous philanderer, the disinterested father, a great man, with concomitantly great flaws. History had turned him into a nearly cosmic event, the perfect man at the right moment, the only one who could have forged political unity on the anvil of personal power. And, against all evidence, he'd once married for love.
The swinging doors into the north wing opened for him, and Miles glanced up to thank the guard holding them open on the other side. But the man wasn't looking at him, or the hall monitor, or even off into the middle distance, the way they disconcertingly did sometimes. Miles followed his glance down. Negri sauntered through, coming the other direction, then paused in the doorway to lick a paw and scrub fastidiously at his face. The guard waited at rigid attention. His eyes rolled in startlement when Miles stepped disgustedly around the cat. Well, that certainly explained how Negri got anywhere he wanted in the residence. Miles thought a series of more or less treasonous things on the subject of the Imperial feline, and returned to his office. Avalo stuck his head in just before lunch, to say that General Allegre was on his way over to hand-deliver the IMSEC investigative files he'd requested. "I'll just come out to him, then," Miles said. He stood and hopscotched through the maze of stacked papers. "Find anything?" Avalos asked, holding the door for him. "No," Miles said. "Well, yes." Dorka's hand-drawn tactical maps, and first drafts of all his declarations, including his first attempt at the disbanding of Count's armies and the limit on armsmen, which is a lot more sarcastic than the official version. He shook his head. But no, nothing, actually. He'd been hoping for the other half of their correspondence, perhaps overlooked or forgotten by Gregor. But there was nothing. The conversation remained half complete. "It's like she didn't exist," Miles said. "How is that possible?" "Maybe all her letters were burned on her pyre," Avalo suggested. "Or his, for that matter. Say, you're related to her brother. Do you think you might have something stuck away in the attic somewhere?" "Don't think so. All his things went up when the Sedagandans torched his estate." Miles paced a tight circuit around the outer office, frustrated. It was as if she were on the other side of soundproofed glass, trapped in silence. And elusive, too. Whenever he tried to focus on her, his attention slid off like water onto her husband or her son. "What happened to you, my lady?" Gregor was right. It was possible he would never know. Lumiere's gallop was even better than Miles had hoped. The park trail had a straight shot down a gentle slope, smooth-packed dirt a few hundred yards long. They flew down in what felt like a single breath, and Miles slowed to a canter only reluctantly. Lumiere felt like he could do that all day, but Colonel Inseri's pied ball didn't have quite the same pace, and Inseri had recently picked up this way of looking at Miles like, "It wounds me in my beating heart," whenever Miles did something he shouldn't, like leave his long-suffering security in the dust. Looking back, Miles realized he'd left behind more than Inseri. He'd apparently outstripped the entire riding party. Only his beleaguered personal guard were visible, strung out along the path behind him. Miles sighed and turned Lumiere with a touch to the reins. They trotted stately back up the slope, and passed Inseri just as the first riders appeared from out of the trees. The path was very wide, so Miles kept going against the tide, nodding as he passed the Verbretons and the Verrettiers. Simon Ilion and Lady Alice came, horses shoulder to shoulder. She was riding side saddle, rather than stoop to trousers or split skirts, as many of the other ladies had done. Miles turned to fall in with them, acknowledging Ilion's casual salute. "Afternoon," he said cheerfully.
"Good afternoon, dear," Lady Alice said, smiling benevolently upon him.
"Ah," said Miles, wondering a bit frantically what he'd done to make her so happy. Then again, it was entirely possible that Ivan had recently done something particularly egregious to the maternal sensibilities, and Miles was simply elevated in comparison. "All right, what did I do?" he asked, coming up blank. You insert social events on Gregor's calendar before I do,
Alice said sweetly.
And then get him to come along without that look on his face like he's getting a migraine. It's good for him to relax more in company,
she added, in the same tones Miles's mother had used to inform him that he ought to eat his broccoli.
Newlyweds, said Simon,
who was married in all but name, thank you.
They're really quite piquant, aren't they?
Lady Alice asked.
Just the other day, I caught Miles here slipping into Gregor's office when he was gone to hide a book of poetry in his desk. I have a question,
Miles said loudly, before there could be further exploration of this topic. Not for you, he added, at Alice's inquiring look. Simon, are there any more detailed blueprints of the residence than the ones the steward has? A frown touched Gillian's brow.
No,
he said slowly. Then more certainly.
No. Those aren't complete, of course, but I think they're the best copy we have. Why do you ask?
He added, with predictable nosiness. After a rocky start, Ilian had settled into a solid, well-matured retirement, tempered by that flashing, ironic wit, and a habit of curiosity that would never be quenched.
Just thinking about a room that wasn't labeled, Miles said.
I'll keep thinking about it, if it's important,
Ilian offered, a bit diffident in that way he got when he thought he might have lost something they needed.
No, don't trouble yourself, Miles said. I was just curious.
They chatted for a few more minutes as they made their stately progress down the hill. Simon had developed a passion for literature, and he'd had several scholarly book reviews published. Anonymously, of course, for the sake of the poor nerves of the authors he'd lambasted. Miles drew him out on a Camaran short story writer they'd both read, and reflected that they never could have had this conversation 10 years ago. Simon didn't read fiction then, or patronize the theater, or garden. Miles drifted back at last, and greeted Garen the shipbuilder and his wife. He turned and slowly worked his way back through the winding trail of writers, exchanging nods as he went. It was a glorious day, warm but breezy, and everyone was in high spirits. The Glenis ambled by, followed by a few of their friends. Miles had harassed Dove into a half-decent rider over the past few years, but he winced to see some of the other Camarans. Dr. Farley had the grimly determined look of someone whose only goal was staying on. "Relax your hands," Miles suggested as he passed. "And your legs. And your... relax your everything." He found Gregor at the very end of the pack, riding alone but for Vortala and a few other watchful eyes. His gray was going at a lazy amble. The reins were looped loosely around Gregor's wrist, and the Glenis' young daughter was tucked in the crook of the other arm. "Relaxing in company. Ha!" "Practicing?" Miles asked, turning to fall in beside him. Lumiere adjusted his stride without being asked. Clever thing.
"We're discussing horses," Gregor said.
Anya babbled in happy confirmation, flailing one hand at Miles.
"And what does the young lady think?"
Miles asked, amused.
"She seems to like the big ones," Gregor said. "Or at least, I think that's what blowing bubbles means."
They reached the bottom of the hill and turned into the last stretch of the 2-mile looped riding trail. Miles rode in silence, listening to Gregor's soft monologue, punctuated by Anya's determined vowel sounds. He only hoped Gregor could keep this quiet confidence when the child was his own, complete with freighted Vorbara chromosomes. Plus Miles's own contribution, of course, given last year, when he'd been dying. For all he was in line for the Imperium,
he and Gregor were less related, genetically speaking, than any two randomly selected Beriarans, thanks to the two infusions of Baton DNA in Miles's recent ancestry. And they weren't all that relationally related, either. Not to the tangled extent some Vor families were. In fact, their first common ancestor was Emperor Dorka. They reached the open green where the rest of the party was dismounting. Miles swung down before a groom could supply a block, and went to Lumiere's head to rub the velvety nose and tell him what a marvelous creature he was. Gregor passed him, murmuring,
"Usually you only look at me like that,"
and strolled off to return Anya before Miles could come up with a suitable retort. Miles produced the apple he snagged from the lunch table and carved it into chunks with his boot knife. He and Lumiere shared them, crunching companionably. At least until Galenai dashed up, a bit wild around the eyes. "You found letters?" he demanded.
Yes? Miles asked.
"From Emperor Dorka?" Galenai said. And Miles abruptly realized that he was looking at the slavering graduate student, not the urban officer. "Oh," he said. "Yes. I take it you'd like to see them?"
"Can I?" Galenai asked,
in a tone that suggested he'd come straight through Miles, if necessary.
"Sure," Miles said, highly amused. "I'd like your opinion, come to think of it. You haven't forgotten all your Beriarin history, have you?"
Delia appeared, Anya in her arms. "If it's old, he reads it," she informed Miles. "You can come now, if you want."
"Great," Galenai said.
Delia cleared her throat pointedly, and he looked momentarily blank.
I can catch a cab,"
Dr. Farley said quickly.
"Oh, right," Galenai said, deflating. "I can run you home and come right back."
"Both of you come,"
Miles said, expansively happy after the ride. "Farley, you can explain to me why force-grown organ prices have gone up so much, while Galenai has historical raptures." He turned regretfully back to Lumiere. He'd had vague thoughts of throwing his weight around and riding the 2 miles back to the stables on the surface streets. But he didn't think he could get either Kamaran back on a horse at this point. Which also meant leaving the tack and rub down to a groom. Grandaw was turning in his grave. Miles gave the reins over to a groom and lifted a hand in summons to Inseri. Gregor joined them in the car, where they chatted inconsequentially. Gregor left them in the entrance hall, hurrying off for a quick stop in his office, and then out again for a fast trip to the Vormir district. "The whole thing is extremely strange," Miles said in answer to Galenai's prodding. "Letters from Dorka to Catherine, his first wife," he interpolated for the benefit of Farley. "But no replies from her, and, well, come see." A proper door had been installed in place of the ragged hole. Galenai circled the room as Miles had, hands clasped behind his back. He spent a long time on his knees at the little hinged door.
"Not locked," he said, "though there might be another latch on the other side that locks. How did you find this place, anyway? That door wasn't there before."
"Home renovations," Miles said. Galenai looked pained.
"And here I thought, when Delia said you were bashing holes in the wall, she was speaking metaphorically. Have I mentioned lately, my lord, how glad I am that you're not in my chain of command anymore?"
"Yep," Miles said brightly. "Now you're in mine."
"He commanded you?"
Farley asked from the doorway, puzzled.
"In the technical sense that I outranked him militarily, and he was supposed to do as I told him, yes,"
Galenai said dryly.
"In reality, it was actually like, well, It was like trying to ride one of those infernal horses. The sense of being perpetually 2 seconds from landing on your head is very evocative.
You were great, Miles protested. I thought we got to have an excellent working relationship when it was all said and done.
That's because I spent half of it missing, so I couldn't give you inconvenient orders, Galena retorted. Farley grinned, uncertain. So, how about those letters?
Galena prompted. They adjourned to the sitting room, where Galena spread the letters out on the low coffee table and burbled happily over the personalized military tidbits he unearthed. Then he slowly went quiet, reading more carefully.
That's unexpected, he said, setting a letter down.
I know, Miles said, jerking the thumb at the open door into Catherine's pretty prison. It doesn't square up with letters like that.
Or with his womanizing, Galena said. Though I suppose, now I'm thinking of it, all the stories are later, during the occupation. Maybe he was only unfaithful to his second wife. A good thing, too. More reliable birth control by then.
There were effective abortifacients during the time of isolation, Farley put in from the other end of the sofa.
Some people still use them, I hear, in regions where an implant would be too expensive.
He was politely appalled. By the poverty or the witch doctory, Miles couldn't tell.
Working on it, Miles said. I'm pretty sure we can get the counts to cough up for a rural reproductive services grant organization this year.
What were the objections? Farley asked, in all innocence. Miles counted them off on his fingers.
More encouragement for this mad uterine replicator fad. What on earth will our wives do if they're not bearing children? By God, I hate that Vorkosigan imperial upstart.
My children will help, he added thoughtfully. With the uterine replicator part, I mean, not the hating me part.
That's very efficient of you,
Farley said, with palpable dubiousness.
Not really, Galena said, eyes glued to a letter. This is Bar AR. The personal and the political claps to the same thing here. Take him, he added, jabbing a finger blindly at Miles. I'm still not sure if he got married in order to change the world, or if he's changing the world so he can be married.
They come to the same thing, Miles said.
See? Galena said to Farley. You get used to it eventually, and it works better than you'd expect.
Negri wandered in from the hall and commandeered a sunbeam on the rug, where he commenced fastidiously bathing. Farley was frowning.
I'm just not built that way. My parents are both doctors. Middle class, strictly non-political. No time, really. Closest they get is annoyed when some hothead with a cause shuts down the whole damn city with a bomb threat.
Galena looked up at that.
You realize you just compared Vor Imperial sovereign loyalty to Kamaran terrorism? He asked.
Farley stuttered.
Ha! Miles said.
First time Gregor made that comparison to me, wine came out of my nose. He glanced over to Farley, who had gone suddenly silent. It's not inaccurate, you know. I can admire the patriotism, the devotion to abstract sovereignty, while still abhorring the violence.
That's incredibly Barry-Aren, Farley said slowly. Except, if you'll forgive me, the last part.
Working on that, too, Miles said.
Oh, good God! What have you eaten now?
Negri was hunched over, making alarming hacking sounds.
Over the rug, naturally.
Gah! Miles added, as the cat swelled to twice his normal size, then expelled a mass of something. Sorry, he added, making a face to his guests. I don't know what's gotten into him lately. or what he's gotten into, more likely. Let me just...
Farley said, leaning forward.
My lord, has he seen a veterinarian lately?
I don't think so, Miles said, frowning. He's Gregor's, really. Damn, if there was something really wrong with him, Gregor would be crushed.
I thought cats just did that sometimes.
They do. Farley slid off the sofa onto his knees and leaned close for a look, medically unperturbed by stray bodily fluids.
Only, there usually isn't blood, he said. Here now, let's have a look then.
He added to Negri and gathered him up carefully. Negri was limp and unhappy, batting only vaguely at him. Farley murmured soothingly to him, reflexive bedside patter, as he pressed two fingers to the cat's tiny heartbeat. He rubbed a thumb under Negri's jaw, then neatly popped his mouth open.
"Can I have some light here?"
he asked peremptorily. Miles played the part of assisting nurse and passed him one of the hand lights Avalos had left. Farley shone it into Negri's mouth, went, and moved on to his ears. He touched a fingertip to the cat's nose, then pried up an eyelid.
"There's blood in the sclera," he said slowly. "Not much, but it's there."
"What does that mean?" Miles asked apprehensively. Farley sat back, switching the light off. His face worked in furious thought.
"Blood in the sclera," he repeated. "Vomiting. Petechial hemorrhages in the mouth. And elsewhere, too, I bet, if we shaved him. Blood in the... No. 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 It couldn't."
His eyes snapped to Miles.
"Are your antivirals up to date?" he demanded.
"Yes," Miles said promptly. "Broad-spectrum immune enhancement, just last month."
"Why?" "I'm wrong," Farley said plainly. "I mean, I've got to be. But just in case I'm not..."
He shook himself.
"I took a medical history course once. The history of epidemics. And it can't possibly be. But your cat has Beriaran blood rot."
Gregor swung into the apartment a half hour after their usual dinner time, an apology on his lips. It died there as he halted in sheer astonishment.
"Good God!"
Gregor swung into the apartment a half hour after their usual dinner time, an apology on his lips. It died there as he halted in sheer astonishment.
"Good God!" he said. "The lion has laid down with the lamb."
Miles looked up from one of Dorka's letters. On his lap, Negri didn't stir. "He's drugged up to his eyeballs," Miles said. "He'll be appalled by his behavior once he's sober. Hold on," he added suddenly. "Which of us is the lamb?"
"What happened?"
Gregor asked, alarmed. "He's fine," Miles said hastily. "Or he will be. They had to go in and take out a few bits of his gut that had gone necrotic. Here, come sit down." Gregor did, and curved one hand over Negri's sleeping head.
"What happened?" he repeated.
"He has the blood rot," Miles said. "Symptoms are perfect. We don't have a viral sample to compare from a century ago, but it makes perfect sense. The mouse," he added, at Gregor's continued confusion. "The one he ate, remember? Can't confirm now, but pretty good bet what it died from, back in the day."
"But the blood rot is fatal," Gregor protested, face twisting. "People, horses, everything died."
"Not anymore," Miles said. "The most basic antiviral we've got zapped it, first go. Hundreds of thousands dead," he added wearily.
all for want of a few grams of viral retroengineering. Gregor's face eased, and he gently scruffed at the back of Negri's neck.
So we can't get it?
No, our regular antivirals should assure that. And we'd know by now, anyway.
You should see your doctor, Gregor said abruptly. You had that awful infection the spring before the wedding when you were recovering. We need to be sure...
Miles laid his hand over Gregor's. I'm fine, he said firmly. And Negri will be, too. He lifted the placid cat and passed him over. Gregor held him gently, rolling him to inspect the tiny incision in his abdomen. This explains everything, you know, Miles said quietly. Catherine, he added, at Gregor's blank look.
She was sick,
Gregor said, figuring it out. She was dying, Miles corrected. And pregnant, of course. Maybe they'd thought the nausea was morning sickness, at first. She'd been confined sometime in her fourth month, as far as he could tell. So the baby had started to show right about the time the bruises had come up on her face and her arms, unmistakable. It could go dormant for years in someone, he explained. I've been doing some reading. Maybe the stress of the pregnancy triggered it. Who knows?
And no one could know, Gregor said slowly. There would have been panic, and they couldn't risk Dorca getting sick.
No, not with the fragile newborn piece balanced on a sword's point, held together by pure will, all Dorca's. If he'd been infected, if he'd died like everyone did, without an immediately obvious heir. Miles shivered. If he'd died, it was entirely possible they would still be at war today. So they locked her up, Miles said, so no one could see her. And he wrote to her, every day. And when it got to her lungs, when the coughing got so she couldn't speak, they'd sat on the floor in the hall in the little room and had their nightly marital conversations on paper. He'd had to burn hers, of course. He probably hadn't dared even touch them. It's ironic, Miles added tiredly, because it's a good bet he was immune by then, that he'd caught the lesser strain when he was younger.
That's awful, Gregor said quietly.
Yeah. Miles slowly restacked the letters. They made much more sense now, agonizingly. They did what they could, he said. She hung on long enough to give birth. He tumbled through a spate of futile speculations. Had her death left resentment in Dorca for the child who survived her? What might have been, had she lived?
What might not have been? He must have spent years waiting for Yuri to get sick, Gregor said, going down a different path. They used to kill the infants of infected mothers as a matter of course, you know. Though, if I remember right, most of the children were actually fine, at least until they started breastfeeding. Hellish risk to take, letting him live, for all they knew.
But Beriar needed an heir, Miles said. He wished he could add that she'd fought for her son's life, that she'd convinced ruthless Dorca to let him live. Possible, certainly. The scattered reflections in Dorca's letters showed a bright, passionate woman. But that was all they had of her, reflections. And Miles could say nothing of her with certainty. I would have liked to know you, silent lady. She did her duty, Miles said. And no one could ever know. Gregor breathed out.
But now we do. Hail, Empress Catherine.
They leaned together for a long stretch of silence, while Negri snored gently in Gregor's lap. These should be in a museum, Miles said, touching the letters. Or published. He expected Gregor's finely honed privacy boundaries to rebel at that, but Gregor only gave a considered nod,
Of course, he said. Miles ran a hand down Negri's curved spine, while it would be permitted. The cat was warm and soft, breathing steadily. I want to convince you of something, Miles said slowly. And then you can hold some other people down for me while I convince them.
I'm listening, Gregor said.
They were running late, of course. Miles wandered down the portrait gallery, glancing from the painted faces he passed to the view of lush spring greenery below Vorhartung Castle. There was furious activity behind him, where the Vorbara portraits hung. Every emperor and crown prince, painted upon coronation or majority, and replaced when married, and remarried, as the case might be. The portrait of Gregor, a grave-faced 20-year-old, was even now being shuffled off to a less felicitous location. At Miles's elbow, Lord Auditor Dr. Farley coughed.
I hear congratulations will be in order very soon, he said.
Miles grinned involuntarily, resisting the urge to bounce on his toes. Actually, he said, looking over his shoulder to make sure they weren't overheard, it's more like... He checked his chrono elaborately. 4 hours.
Wow. Mazel tov,
Farley said.
My respects to the Crown Prince.
They ambled in silence for a minute, while Miles giddily contemplated the imminent arrival of his firstborn. It really wasn't all that bright that he and Gregor were both already loopy with tiredness, even before they uncorked the new edition, with expansive lungs and no sense of a proper sleep schedule. But they'd stayed up all last night just the same, sitting together on the nursery floor, and blowing through at least 2 bottles of wine. They'd talked themselves hoarse, and kissed each other dizzy and breathless until the sun came up.
I have a question, Farley said.
You generally do, yes, Miles said dryly. Farley had been wearing his new chain for an entire hour now. He was continually fingering it in bemused confusion.
I didn't know what to make of you, you know, he said. All those invitations throughout the winter. The way you kept quizzing me on completely inexplicable things. At first, I thought there was some sort of hysterical mix-up, and I was suspected of something. And then I thought you were in need of, discreet medical services, and wanted to sound me out first.
I was sounding you out, Miles said. Only about other...
Hold on.
He stopped abruptly. You thought I had a venereal disease?
No,
Farley said, completely unconvincingly. Miles made a disgusted noise and turned down the small side corridor where displaced portraits hung. There was Emperor Vlad before his marriage, Serg without Corrine, and Dork and Catherine down at the end.
Anyway, Farley said, trailing him, I'm not fishing for compliments, you understand. I just want to know. Why me?
He sounded genuinely puzzled. Catherine's eyes were blue. Miles had visited her several times throughout the winter. She was not beautiful, but even in the formal portrait, Dorka looked at her as if she were.
You're a new breed, Miles said to Farley. Educated, traveled, politically aware, but unentangled. Refreshingly unrelated to the people you'll often be investigating. And your training in diagnostics, as a way of thinking, I mean, as well as medically, will be useful. He flicked a look over. You're what we need.
All right, Farley said. Only it's a very old job for a new breed. The hubbub in the gallery was subsiding, and Miles turned away from Catherine's portrait to go and look appropriately solemn while his own was hung. "Then change it," he said, and went to join Gregor. The end. This has been A Place to Stand by... This has been A Place to Stand by Light Gets In. It's one part of a larger story arc called A Deeper Season. I hope you'll check out the rest of it.